Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Leftology podcast. After a year-long hiatus, I am finally back because I finally figured out what to do a topic on. And here today, I have a longtime Twitter mutual with me, Ben Gross. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Ben Gross. I'm a Twitter poster, undergraduate philosophy student, and you know, I blog about my thoughts sometimes.
Today I've invited Ben on so that we can talk about his most recent post to his I guess political philosophy Substack. I don't necessarily
Yeah, I
know how to
think you could
describe
call
it.
it that.
Talking about something that has been, I guess, kind of a trend in left Twitter. I'd much rather call it a meme, actually, about like the Patrick Bateman ontologically evil meme. Which I will admit, while it does disagree with my philosophy, which you can find on my Substack, it is a fairly funny meme, to be honest.
Yes, I agree. It I mean it, the face he's making, the whole it's funny.
I don't know how to exactly copy it. I mean, both I wanted to invite you on because both of us kind of have an objection to this kind of I guess moral viewpoint. It can be hard to kind of hold a much more, I think we come at it in very different ways. Like I'm a moral relativist or moral intersubjectivist because I'm pretentious. And which leads me to like, be like, there's no actual values. We have to all make it up ourselves. And then you're on the other end, I guess some kind of dogmatic morals other than you, I don't necessarily know how to describe your morals.
Well,
So.
I certainly wouldn't refer to my own beliefs as dogmatic, but certainly, yeah, I tend more towards a realist mode of thought.
So, I mean, both me and Ben are coming at the same thing, getting the same solution, or getting the same output or critique from the exact opposite standpoints, pretty much is how I want to describe it. So I guess with that introduction for the listeners in a way, I guess, was there anything that you wanted to like pull out further than what they can read? Cause, I'll put the Substack specific article as like the first link in the comments below or the description below, not the comments.
Yeah. You know, I think when I was writing it, I wanted it to be like a short posts that people could look back on, but I do think there's a lot of interesting questions, I think, once you get past sort of like the base conclusion that, like, you know, nobody is totally ontologically evil. I think there's still a lot of problems about how do you deal with evil and like what does that mean when you can't treat somebody as like evil in their being. You know, that it's not necessarily immediately clear like where you go from there when somebody does something that's evil.
I think that's a very, very interesting point. I mean, I'm coming at it, I guess, a similar problem from like a lot of our ethics, specifically in the West and how we deal with it, even if a lot of us are secularized, especially on left Twitter, which is I would deem a very, very secular space. Like a lot of it still draws back to these distinctions that are kind of inherent to a Protestant Christian view in a way. We like the clear distinctions without actually liking the content of the particular, I guess, ethics that Protestant Christianity has. So I'm personally, I'm trying to figure out is like, okay, how do we get past these like pure good and evil distinctions and actually like come along and get to a place where we can be like, okay, there's people doing bad shit, but that does not mean that they're like beyond redemption, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I think that's, I certainly think that you, even if you're coming from a point of view that there are moral facts, I think you have to, I still think, even if you come to that conclusion, you have to understand that no person or even no action is really going to totally embody those ideas. There's always some extent to which you are, only partially failing or partially succeeding. And also, one act doesn't define you, and lots of acts don't define you. Lots of decisions don't define you. We're sort of constantly changing. I know that's a big a topic you've written about sort of the ethics of change, of becoming. And I think even coming from a totally different sort of background, I think the themes of redemption, the themes of forgiveness are still really crucial, in any, no matter what your background is, when you're sort of in the world dealing with people, you can't bring certainty to every situation, even if in the back you're certain of some things, I think is what I'd say.
Yeah, specifically with my ethics of becoming, it's kind of really hard to separate my philosophy from my personal life, and I would say that's probably true for most people who do anything with ethics. It's very personal, and nobody really wants to admit it.
Right.
But specifically, mine comes from a place like I guess freshman year. I don't want to get necessarily too personal in the podcast, but I was at this point where I was like, okay, I've improved from high school. I'm not a conservative like I was in sophomore year of high school. I'm not a shit person anymore. And then like I come to the end of freshman year and I'm like, oh my God, I still do a lot of horrible shit. Like not like reprehensible anyway, but like I probably say a few things or a few mean things to friends or something like that occasionally. And at the end I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not done improving yet. So I want to focus on an ethics that really doesn't glorify anybody. And it just says that, like, okay, we only got 80, 90 years here. You obviously haven't perfected it at 20. And you're obviously not going to perfect it at 90. So how do we
Yeah.
still have an ethical form without being sure or having some objective appellate judge, I guess, is how I would phrase it. And how would you, I guess, going off of that route, describe your journey to where you got to a, I don't know, somewhere between Kantian and utilitarianism? I don't know exactly where to put you.
Yeah, probably somewhere in between those two things. I think, for most of my life, I was not invested in philosophy. I was not, I was much more like the politics first, philosophy later. So certainly thinking about like ethical questions is newer to me. But I think, once you look at these things, you sort of realize that you've actually been asking yourself these questions the whole time. Like you're always confronted by, what should I do? What is the right thing to do? And it's really just a matter of like, do you think about it? And do you have a bunch of like the names of old white people who were like saying these are the things? Or is it just, or was it just like your parents told you, don't lie, be nice to your friends? I think, I've pretty much always been left of center. I've never really been particularly religious. And so a lot of my experience has been trying to sort of figure out the language with which to talk about my own beliefs. And then also to find the language with which to like understand why I do bad things. And what does that mean when I do bad things? Because I also have done, bad things to people that I care about, or people that I don't know, or, I think everybody struggles with that. And yeah, I mean, there are times where like you think you're unforgivable for the things you do. And then, but you still have to keep living and figure out, is that true? Is that not true? And I basically came to the conclusion that if I don't think it's true for myself, if I don't think that, I am unforgivable, then it's really not fair for me to put that label onto other people, even if they do worse things than I did.
Yeah, I think that slides very, very well into what I was going to ask next, which is I remember in high school when I started my philosophy journey, I guess, it started kind of with The Good Place, but also from an area of politics in the same way, in that I was the person who had been my AP US history teacher when we were talking about, I guess, ethics in the ancient world, because she made us read Marcus Aurelius for Western Civ, I think, in high school. And we were talking about ethics while I was like, I guess I didn't have a class that period, so sometimes I would stay over. I don't exactly remember that period of my life extremely well anymore. But I was just going through the Wikipedias of all these like different ethical theories, and eventually I'd be like, okay, utilitarianism sounds nice. Okay, and do the most positive, but there's these like special cases where like doing the most positive isn't qualitative enough to where like you actually get a good prescription out of it. You can still cause a great deal of harm, but there's also like this weird view of utilitarianism, I forget what it's called, where it's reducing harm rather than causing happiness. But I'm like, well, you don't have any happiness there. That doesn't sound quite right either. Then I get to deontology. Next, and I'd be like, I don't know if this is a concrete way of actually making rules for everybody. Nobody's actually going to follow this. Virtue ethics is kind of, I don't exactly know how to feel about virtue ethics, because I've only read Aristotle's. But overall, what just turned me off one after another was these like extreme cases, because like most moral theories work very well most of the time. And then you get to these very, very weird cases, like I don't like the guy, but Robert Nozick's like utility monster. Like if that was possible, you would have to keep giving all the good stuff to the utility monster because they experience it 3 times better than everybody else. And it's like that's not real, but I guess it's going to. I guess there is a critique there, but like, how do you propose? Like, I'm not gonna ask you to solve ethics right now, but how do you think we should deal with these extreme cases in a way?
I find myself torn on this question a lot. I'm a big, I don't know if I'd call myself a fan. I'm a very deep reader of John Rawls.
I know.
And he makes the argument that a lot of the time these sort of tough cases are just distract from any sort of attempt to like teach us how to live our lives or how to organize a political system. And that, if you just find yourself bogged down in like these hyper specific sort of contrived scenarios that just some guy, in his room came up with to specifically with the like to break something, then you're always going to find yourself, with a problem. Like there is no idea that can't be broken by somebody like with all of the resources available to and all the hypotheticals they want to breaking something. And I think there is like that's pro like that might be true. Like there really might be no way that like you just some unconstrained intellect cannot find some problem somewhere. But then I also do think like, but that if you're gonna have a moral theory that says like this is the right way to live, like maybe it should just be completely foolproof. Like how, like if you're going to tell me like this is a way to organize the entirety of your life, it does seem a little bit like a cop out to say, well, it's not perfect.
Yeah, I kind of feel like my personal ethics, like I'm not hiding this in any way, but I'm just like, keep the ethics of change away from all the hypotheticals. I do not care about the hypotheticals. I'm a coward and do not want to confront those right now. All that matters is that you keep changing. And your view towards when we get to the hypotheticals will change to where you do the good thing. And I'm just hoping that nobody ever points that out.
No, I mean, I think basically you are always going to find yourself in a position to bite some bullets. So maybe, you know, you're never going to find something perfect, but you're going to find something with like the best tasting bullets, you know? That's actually an extremely dark metaphor, but
I'm trying to think of what the best tasting bullets would be.
I mean,
magnesium.
I think a lot of people think it's utilitarianism, you know?
If you're a real bullet biter, then. Yeah, I would say utilitarianism bites the most bullets, but it also seems to be an ethics of biting bullets at the same time.
Yeah.
That seems to be like the central thing they do.
It does seem like a lot of the time you just like are like, here's like this really big issue with utilitarianism. All this bad stuff is going to happen. And they're like, good. And, you know, on one hand, like, that's kind of cool. On the other hand, like, really? Like, you're just totally fine with, you know, torturing people or.
Yeah, I remember freshman year when I took my first philosophy course at college. I remember learning about Peter Singer towards the end. And I was like, wow, he's cool because he's like dogmatically utilitarian. And like, he takes it to like the logical extreme. Even if I don't agree with him, like, he goes all the way. And now I'm like, yeah, he's just an ass.
Yeah. Yeah,
worst person on the planet? No, but like, not somebody I'd want to like be making all my moral decisions for me.
Right, yeah. No, I mean, so I certainly for a long time was a utilitarian. I think that describes a lot of people, especially left Twitter apps we've been talking about. And I think eventually I just came to the conclusion after reading, you know, sort of a lot of different stuff, continental philosophy, analytic philosophy. I just sort of came to the conclusion that it really does not have the proper respect for like each person, you know, like I think the idea that sort of it treats everybody as interchangeable, everybody as just sort of these machines to produce utility is just so at odds with the way that I encounter the world.
I mean, it's very different from the way the left kind of encounters the world, because typically, I would imagine most of us do take a particular, I guess, position towards certain people. Like, we want to be in favor of minorities over whatever race is in control in a certain country, or towards the working class over the owners, I guess. So utilitarianism doesn't exactly always work in that case. If you want to have both.
I think you're onto something there. I mean, I think, you know, if there's one thing that I think the left is devoted to a lot of the time, it's a sort of a belief in equality. And I think the really thin version of equality in utilitarianism, which is just that like everybody's utility matters the same, is just sort of, you know, I don't think that's a rich enough account of what it means to be equal to each other.
Yeah, I kind of get that. I really want this, I guess, I don't know if it really would fit under quality or equity or whoever cares about that distinction. I have no idea. But like, there's a need for like this qualitative dimension in ethics. Like, I guess the situation somewhat provides that for utilitarianism, but there needs to be a way to, I don't necessarily want to say analyze, because I don't know if that's necessarily the way it would be done, but a way to just not have everything be on one exact plane, because that's not how the world is necessarily set up. It's not a flat 2D plane that we can measure. with perfect rulers and protractors and so on and such.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at ethics for a way to act, I think utilitarianism is surprisingly difficult to use when you're trying to determine how to act, because it's very easy to start convincing yourself that like whatever decision like you most like want to do, regardless of its ethical implications, can be justified under utilitarianism. It's very easy to start telling yourself these stories about like how your utility gain, from one thing will totally outweigh whatever utility loss. It's why a lot of utilitarians start saying like the best way to be a utilitarian is like to be a deontologist at like the local level, because otherwise you just start tricking yourself really into doing all these things that
Oh.
you think they would.
Yeah, that's kind of a critique I've had. I remember I wrote my final paper in my ethics class my sophomore year, kind of as a critique of primarily utilitarianism against care ethics, which I was a care ethicist for a little while, but I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I've gone past it. Or I'm doing something different. I don't want to say past. I don't want to say like I'm doing anything better than Carol Gilligan or the other care ethicist. But I had like two main critiques in there, I think. One of them was that it's that, I mean, now I'd say I'm more Foucauldian, and I believe you've taken a class on Foucault, so
I did, yeah.
I see much more of everything. Like our belief system is like an expression of the power system that we exist in. That's also in Marx and a lot of other thinkers, and that's going to include what we think of as the good. Because if that's kind of why I want to privilege like Levinas and Hegel do, like this discourse in ethics. Like if we're not talking to other people, we're just going to be able to justify whatever we think is right in a way. Like you were saying with utilitarianism, the good is slowly going to become what we want in a way. And the other is that I remember saying, I think this might be a direct quote from that paper, that utilitarianism is particularly strong in the hypothetical world, but that's because the hypotheticals get this ability to be ahistorical in a way. I probably tweeted it two or three times at this point, but my critique of the trolley problem is like, why are the trolley's brakes broken? Like, sure, I'm questioning the bounds of the hypothetical, but was there not something we could have done to make sure the brakes didn't, break down in the middle of the trolley run? Could we not have better safety regulations to make sure their people aren't unaware of a train coming to hit them? And so on and such. Like, did you vote for Republicans who stopped funding public transport for the last decade? Like these are like the real world ethical questions that I think are important to. If a hypothetical like that ever happened, like they don't just exist in a vacuum. The Titanic sank and killed half of its passengers because nobody was thinking that they needed enough lifeboats. And that crisis provided the knowledge to be like, hey, these ships can like go to the bottom of the ocean in freezing cold water. We need to make sure that everybody can live in a very safe and quick manner.
Yeah, I think all of these things are reasons why I just don't find it, I just don't find it a compelling account of what it means to be a good person, or how to be a good person.
Yeah, I guess I want to curtail the discussion back to kind of where we started off with this, I guess, moral ontology, I guess I would call it, because utilitarianism is like it's perfectly equal, I guess, for everybody. I guess its benefit is there is no moral ontologically good or bad. Everybody is like happiness matrix or
Right.
whatever
And
you call it.
it's just better or worse too. There is no there, it's just about, sort of comparing a set of options, which I think I would say, I think any account of morality needs to take something from that sort of comparative aspect. Even if in some ways you want to, sort of put the Archimedean point somewhere in, an ideal or a non-ideal, I think, there's no way to go through the world and just say, like, this is a good or bad person, at least. This is or even a good or bad choice. It's a better or worse choice than the other choices available to them.
Yeah, I mean, like we were discussing when I DM'd you about this, like, I don't want to get too much into what's been going on in the last week because I know it's probably not going to be the best discussion choice, even if we do perfectly agree on the stuff. But there is this extreme case where, like we were talking about, where it just ethics just gets so personal, where we would like to be able to dream that the people that are committing these heinous acts are just horrible
Yeah.
people all the way down to their core. But I guess I'll give you the chance to say what you want after I explain this. But something I think the benefit of not having this, I guess, moral good versus evil ontology is that you're going to get much, much further with these, I guess, types of people that we would want to really quickly just describe as evil and disregard, even if they are doing really heinous shit. You get a lot more out of it if you're willing to, if you have the time and the mental, I guess, stability at the moment to just think it's like this person is the result of causes and effects. The reason they view morality in a certain way is due to a certain way they were raised. There's a certain morals of the society, morals of friends, morals of family that they collected and are showing back out in the world through these kinds of acts. And if we're just going to label them off, we're never able to truly counter the things that are causing them to be this way.
Yeah, I sort of came to a similar thought. I mean, when something really bad happens to somebody that you really care about, and you can pretty clearly trace, here are the people that caused this, that did this to somebody, then man, I mean, you really do just want to be able to blame them, hate them, feel like, there was nothing they can do that would change how you should feel about them, would feel about them. And that, like, but I think there's a degree to which that is an easier way of thinking without necessarily being a right way of thinking, sort of a more satisfying way of thinking that is ultimately hollow because, these people were subject to systems and other people, that are extremely diffuse, ideas that came to them through, a society that they didn't choose, that was taught to them by people who are dead now. And there really is no way to trace responsibility back to one person, which sucks because you want to be able to point to somebody and be like, this is 100% your fault. I blame you. I know who my enemy is now. And I know, that I must punish you. I must do this to get revenge or to feel like I've satisfied, my desire to right a wrong. I think that is satisfying. I certainly feel the desire to do that all the time. I've certainly felt the desire to do that in the past week. But I think there's a certain degree to which you're just letting yourself off the hook of the harder work of changing those systems and those structures. And, you know, when you just get to blame one person instead of, you know, an entire world that lets stuff, you know, that lets bad stuff happen, there's a degree to which you're kneecapping yourself and you're kneecapping your ability to stop bad stuff from happening in the future.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, I don't know if I really have much more to say, I guess, on this topic, but like I said, and you said, like, it just a lot of, I guess, my personal ethics is just focused on like learning about others. I think that's a very, very important thing to do, and I don't think it's something that a lot of people let themselves do often enough, honestly. But if we're just going to label people really quickly, no matter how easy it is, no matter how reprehensible their actions are, we're not necessarily going to be able to make this world a much better place if we're just going to be able to label ourselves into quick, nice dichotomies.
Yeah. You know, there's an idea that was I don't think it was introduced to him, but it was sort of fleshed out by the philosopher Thomas Nagel about moral luck. And
I think I've read that essay actually.
I
It's been
think
a while.
it's a good essay, and I think it's a very humbling essay.
Yeah, I was thinking of that while you were talking last, the last little thing you had to say before this. I was just thinking it's like a few different, if a few days went a different direction, I would be one of the right-wing posters that I'd make fun of daily now. Like it's just
Yeah.
insane that like if one day 7 or 6 years ago went differently, like I would be a completely different person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, some unsolicited autobiography is just that I sort of was introduced to left-wing politics, by, you know, sort of a YouTube rabbit hole. I started watching Secular Talk with Kyle Kulinski, and that was like my political awakening. And you know, like if YouTube had decided to recommend some right winger that day instead of a left winger, like who knows what I would think? I like to imagine that I would have figured out, you know, oh, actually, this is horrible. But you know, I don't know. There are a lot of contingent things happening all around us that end up weighing so profoundly on what we think to be true, including what we think to be morally true.
Yeah, I think a moment like that is just that's kind of what how I got into the ethics specifically, because I remember I think the Kavanaugh hearings was the moment where I was like, okay, I'm not a Republican anymore. This is not the party that holds my values, because like I had friends that had been through the stuff that what's her name? I forget the doctor that went up against Kavanaugh that she was describing, and I was like, oh, every single one of these Republicans is just making fun of her. What the hell? This is not what I believe in. And then like the day after I found some more news on YouTube, and I was open to like be like I was willing to like completely change my worldview because my worldview had been shattered because the ideas that I had and the party that I believed that held those ideas had been just completely shattered for a moment. And that one just the 2 3 day time just completely shifted the I guess path of my life up for the last what 5 years now. It's
Yeah.
hard to think that it's been that long, honestly. But yeah, I mean, I'm gonna wrap up because I do have somewhere to be and I do not have Zoom Pro right now. But thank you for coming on. Is there anything you would like to promote at all?
You know, you can follow me on Twitter at Ben Gross BG, my name and then my initials. My Substack is linked to that, so if you want to read, you know, my thoughts. You can go there. But that's pretty much it.
Well, thank you for coming on. The Substack article we're talking about should be the first thing, like I said earlier in the podcast, that I have linked down there. But thank you for listening to Leftology. I know it's been a while. I hope to have been on again so we can have a longer discussion, hopefully about something just as or more interesting next time. But thank you for listening. And we'll hopefully have new episodes soon.